We're committed to that peace. I'm committed to that peace. And this peace, I think, will better the lives of Israelis, of Palestinians, and it certainly would change our region.
The United States is committed to Israel's security. We are committed to that special bond. And we are going to do what's required to back that up, not just with words, but with actions.
So depending on how you read the tea leaves, there is either progress being made toward direct peace negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians and a warming of relations between President Obama and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, both of whom we just heard there, or there was a completely phony photo op with the two men at the White House yesterday accompanied by insincere vows that neither of them meant. So let's try to figure out which. And we'll also ask why the subterranean issue of Israeli nuclear weapons has suddenly surfaced as a topic of official conversation. With us for a brief update is Ethan Bronner, Jerusalem Bureau Chief for The New York Times. He also contributed to the Times story yesterday about tax-exempt donations from Americans to groups helping Israeli settlements that the U.S. opposes. Hi, Ethan. Welcome back to WNYC. Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
President Obama said in that clip and elsewhere that he now expects direct peace talks this summer before Israel's moratorium on settlement construction expires in September. Who would talk to whom about what?
Well, I guess if he has his way and the Israelis have their way, they will have dangled enough in front of the Palestinians to lead the Palestinians to begin direct talks before September 26th so that the vow that the Palestinians have made, which is not to have direct talks before an extension of the settlement freeze goes into effect, can be ignored. I mean, that seems to be the plan at the moment, to try to find enough things that Israel can do for the Palestinian Authority in the coming month that would allow them to start direct talks, and then we'll have to see how they finesse the settlement freeze or not.
And what about what the Palestinians could do for Israel? Why doesn't President Obama publicly pressure the Palestinians to rein in what he sees as their excesses, like he publicly pressures Israel? Or does he, and it's just not as reported as much by the media?
Well, I think that the largest concerns that Israel has about the Palestinians at the moment have to do with a lack of ability to do certain things. There is the notion of so-called incitement, which is that there are streets and squares named after Palestinians who've engaged in terrorist acts, some of whom have been pretty much nothing but terrorists, and they're in the schools and generally on the media, it's not a particularly Israel-friendly environment. And I think that that's something that the Israelis have complained about. And I think that when Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, was in Washington and met with Jewish leaders, that issue came up. And that's something that the Americans would like to push the Palestinians on. And I think they have a bit. But the truth is that what the sort of litmus test is, can the Palestinians handle security in the West Bank without the Israelis? And the Israelis think they can't. So it's a little hard to push the Palestinians to do something that the Israelis think they can't do.
The Times quotes aides to Obama and Netanyahu today as saying the two of them discussed Israel's undeclared nuclear weapons program at the meeting yesterday. Does President Obama want Israel to acknowledge its nuclear bombs or destroy them or anything else specifically?
I think that it's a little unclear. I mean, President Obama comes from a background of wanting non-proliferation generally and an end to nuclear weapons around the world. And so as a sort of broad goal, I think he'd like to see the day when Israel is part of that. But I don't think that he is pressing them in any way on this point right now.
Does it hurt the credibility of the attempt to stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons that Israel has them and has them secretly without joining the nuclear proliferation treaty process?
Sure. It hurts in many third world places that there is this apparent contradiction or hypocrisy. But you have to remember that the United States and generally the main members of the nuclear club don't make a big deal out of India or out of other certain other countries holding nuclear weapons. They're worried about Iran, because it is run by a government that they don't trust, and that seems, you know, bent on a fairly aggressive pattern in the region, and that also, specifically with regard to Israel, does not recognize its legitimacy. So there are a lot of reasons to worry about Iran having nuclear weapons as opposed to just anyone else having them.
It does mean, though, that our nuclear policy is based on individuals or individual leaders who we trust at the moment rather than a rock-solid international single standard.
It does mean that. You're right.
Your article yesterday about tax-exempt donations to organizations that help build settlements that the U.S. opposes, what's the issue there? Certainly lots of private nonprofits in all kinds of fields, not just Middle East, not just foreign affairs, lots of nonprofits can support endeavors that current U.S. policy opposes, correct?
That is correct. I think what's unusual about this is a number of things. First of all, it's not just current U.S. policy. It, from the minute in 1967 when Israel set foot into the West Bank as its ruler, the United States has urged it not to set up civilian settlements. In September of 1967, when the first settlement was announced, it was front page story in the New York Times, and it drew a specific condemnation from the State Department as well as from the British government. So there's been a complete consistency from the very first minute, 43 years ago, against the civilian settlements in the West Bank. So it's not just kind of, well, sometimes Republicans, sometimes Democrats. The country, and in fact, every single government in the world that has ever expressed its view on it, opposes settlements in the West Bank. So it seemed to us, in some ways, an unusual item to qualify for tax-exempt status. And that's why it seemed interesting, and particularly because everyone who favors a Palestinian state today believes that it can't arise without the settlement enterprise ending and shrinking. And while the U.S. Treasury helps support that settlement enterprise, that's not going to happen.
The only thing about that, and we just have about a minute left, is on the underlying question of settlements, the conventional wisdom now seems to be that Israel would give up most of the land captured in 1967 under a final status agreement, but keep some of it that's become suburbs of Jerusalem. So do you think that can ever be acceptable to the Arabs? For example, Saudi Arabia says it will recognize Israel, but when it withdraws from the 1967 lands, it doesn't say, you know, except for the Jerusalem suburbs. Are those close-in settlements a big issue or not, or do we have to see them separately or not?
Well, I think that others will fall in line behind the Palestinian Authority if the Palestinian Authority comes to a deal with Israel. And the Palestinian Authority has, for 10 years, acknowledged that there's going to be a land swap of some nature. So the idea that there'll be absolute evacuation of the 67, what was conquered in 67, I don't think anybody really believes that anymore. But there's still a huge question of how much will be evacuated and how many settlers will have to move.
Ethan Bronner, Jerusalem Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Brian. All the best.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, New York gets its first new medical school in nearly 50 years. Stay with us.